Hi, I'm Heather Mulder.
And I'm Janice Greeno, and you're listening to Dementia Untangled, where we explore the topic of dementia through conversations with physicians, experts, and community leaders.
Our discussions focus on innovative ideas, practical strategies, and proven methods to guide caregivers along a supportive path.
Hello and welcome to Dementia Untangled. Thank you for joining us for this episode of our podcast.
Today, our conversation will be with Nicole Bell, an author and entrepreneur of medical devices. She also holds a bachelor and a master's degree from MIT and a master's degree from Duke University. And we're going to be discussing her caregiver journey. Janice, I mentioned that Nicole is an author. She wrote a book called What Lurks in the Woods, which is a story of her journey as a caregiver. And she has some really powerful stories in there and really powerful lessons that we can take from her experience. One quote that I pulled from it, though, that I thought particularly resonated with me was, "Sometimes life has a way of pulling what's important into focus, even if it takes mass destruction to clear the path." I feel like that statement of mass destruction clearing a path resonates so deeply with the experience of receiving a diagnosis of dementia. You know, a lot of times life is equated to a journey. We're on a path, we make plans for the future, and then something comes along, and something like a diagnosis of a dementia or Alzheimer's disease, it completely obliterates the path that we were on and the plans that we had made for the future. So I'm really looking forward to talking to Nicole and learning more about her journey and learning some of the lessons that she's taken from it.
Heather, I'm looking forward to this conversation as well. And that quote is so powerful. And I think it really will resonate with our listeners. And there's another quote that she shares. She's just so incredible with words. She said, "I used to think memories were like etchings in stone, but I've learned that memories are more like piles of sand by the ocean." And then she goes on to share about how that's why she wrote the book, that she wanted others to learn from her experience, she wanted herself to remember the experience and to share her journey to help others. And before we get started today, I just want you to know, Nicole, that we as a team are so very grateful that you are with us and that you're going to be sharing your story. And our hearts truly go out to you and your family for the loss that you've gone through. And we're so grateful for your courageous strength to share your journey with us and with others around the world.
Well, thank you, Janice and Heather. It's really a pleasure to be here.
Well, Nicole, before we get started, I want to learn a little bit more about this journey. Could you tell us what led you to connect with the dementia community?
Well, it's all about my husband's journey and the journey of my family. We really just were living what I thought was a perfect life, right? I had my husband who I adored. We had two children. I have a son named Ryan and a daughter named Haley, and they're fantastic. And my husband was about 20 years older than I was. We met in a small startup when we lived in the New England area. And he decided that he was going to take a step back from his job and support me so that I could have the career and the family, going to be Mr. Mom, right? It's like the perfect scenario that I was really excited about. But then all of a sudden, he started to change. He became moody and depressed and irritable, and just we argued all the time. And I thought we were headed for divorce. But, you know, as we went through, we went to therapy, we did all the things that you try and do to reconcile, because we had young children, right? It's a stressful period. And we tried to work through it. But as I was going through that experience, I started noticing other things. And I realized that it wasn't just a mood disorder. It was that his memory was failing. You know, I got a call at work and the alarm, the house alarm was blaring and he couldn't figure out how to shut off the alarm. And eventually I realized that he couldn't remember the code and he forgot the time to pick up the kids from daycare, even though it was the same exact time every day. And we got thrown into that dementia community, not by choice, right? You just get, nobody chooses this path. You get thrown in like a huge tidal wave. And once you are, it changes you because, you know, it is that mass destruction and it takes the life that you thought that you had and puts you on a different path. And that whole journey is so difficult and so memorable that I wanted to share it, to talk about it and really just see if our story and the things that I did well and the things that I did terribly and the things that I was hard on myself, all the experiences and all the thoughts that you have, I wanted to get that out there and share it in the hopes that it would help other people.
You mentioned something that is a really common experience for people who are developing dementia, which is these early personality changes. And I think these are often some of the most challenging and even unrecognized symptoms early on in the disease. You know, we have a whole lot of adjectives that we use to describe what could be going on with that person. You know, they're lazy, they're not listening to me, they're stressed out. It's easy to rationalize these changes. Could you talk to us a little bit more about kind of how that manifested in your husband and how you finally got to the point of understanding it was something more?
It wasn't even on my radar screen. He was, as I mentioned, he's older than I am, but he still was, you know, 59, 60 years old and extremely healthy. He was very athletic. He ate well. He, you know, was in great health. And so dementia is something that you might think about when you're thinking about your parents or somebody who's advanced in age, but you know, we had young children. We were kind of living a very active lifestyle. It didn't even cross my mind. And so, you know, when he started changing, it was really more, well, he's depressed. And he, as I had mentioned, he had stepped back from his role. He was a high-powered executive and he had become Mr. Mom and he had made a lot of life changes and children can be stressful. And so I said, well, it's just that. Maybe it wasn't the right choice for him. But then I tried to convince him to go back to work and that didn't seem to be a fit either. And he would resist and, you know, I think you say lazy. He was never really lazy, but he wouldn't do the things that he used to do and didn't have the energy and the kind of go figure it out spirit that he always had as another engineer. And so you think that it's basically just your circumstances. You tell yourself all these stories. The stories we tell ourselves can be really powerful because you make excuses that fit the model. And it was when his memory started failing. It was that moment that I remember the most was that instant when I got that call at work and the house alarm was blaring and he couldn't figure it out. And it aroused all of my warning bells, like something is wrong and something is different. And now I need to pay attention. And from then on, I started looking and I started noticing and I would notice that he was losing his keys more. He couldn't figure out things that I had told him. And he would say, I hadn't told him when I knew that I had. He would forget sounds in the house that happened constantly. And that was when I realized that it was way bigger than just unhappiness or depression. It was something that was really a major cognitive issue. And I still didn't know what it was. We didn't have a diagnosis, but at least it was something that said, we need to go see a doctor. And then of course, when you have somebody who's irritable and depressed, convincing them that they need to go to the doctor is a whole nother journey. And so that becomes a challenge to say, you know, hey, I think there's something wrong with your cognitive abilities. Let's go to the doctor. And finding that right moment and convincing him was also a struggle.
You said that our stories are so powerful, the stories that we tell ourselves. And before we go any further, I would just like to ask you about the book, What Lurks in the Woods. Take a moment and share with us. That title is so intriguing and the journey to write this book.
When you're going through caregiving and dementia, the journey is really hard. And I'm an engineer. I like to solve problems. I like to figure things out. And one of the ways that I do that is I'm a ruminator, right? I think about things and they kind of go in these circles in my head over and over again. And that usually helps me. But when you're dealing with something like dementia, which doesn't have an obvious solution and doesn't, you know, necessarily end well, that rumination can be unhealthy. And so partway through the journey, I started journaling. It was actually a very specific moment, which ended up becoming the first chapter of the book. I had told my children, specifically my son, because he was older. My daughter was pretty young at the time, so she didn't get it. But I had told my son for the first time that dad was sick. And then the next day I went to work and I couldn't think. I couldn't focus. I couldn't do anything. It was just the rumination cycles were going in my head in something that was just so distracting. I didn't know how to proceed. And so I brought up my computer and I started to write and I started to journal. And I found that by putting it on the page, it stopped that rumination loop and I could let it go and I felt better. And so I kept journaling. And, you know, then as I go through my journey, there were ups and downs and all sorts of different things. And that was when it occurred to me that I was someday going to share our story. And I wanted it to get out there. And I wanted to capture it not only for myself and for my children, but hopefully for others. And so that was a huge part of my coping mechanism. And then, you know, my husband passed away in January of 2022. I launched the book in October of 2021. And that whole process of reviewing my journal entries, making sense of what had happened and living and learning the lessons was a huge part of my healing journey. You know, I like order. In addition to being an engineer, I'm a project manager. So I like everything to have its place and to make sense. And so, you know, taking the chaos that I lived in for years and putting some structure and some meaning behind it was really what I needed to help process the journey and to make a reason for it.
I really appreciate you sharing that. And it's so interesting to hear that what started as something that was so therapeutic for you in your journaling has become this memoir that you've shared now with others. And so thank you for that. And again, our deepest sympathies to you and your family for what you've been through in the loss of your husband, your late husband, Russ. You mentioned this rumination loop. Talk to me more about that and how you pulled yourself through that.
Yeah, I think that, as I said, writing was a huge portion of it. I was not really reaching out to folks in the way that I needed to at the time. My husband was a very intelligent man. He's literally one of the smartest people I've ever met. And as he started to realize that he was having cognitive challenges, he became ashamed. I think that's something that people don't talk about a lot, is that there's a lot of shame that can come along with dementia. And right. He didn't want people to know. He was passing it off. I mean, by the time he got diagnosed, he was already in late stage disease, according to his PET scans. And I didn't even know, because he was just that intelligent that he was passing it off and really didn't exhibit the signs and symptoms until it was pretty progressed. And so he was ashamed and he pulled away from lots of different people. I think between the shame of the diagnosis, between the depression and the mood disorders that go along with it, we became very isolated. And so unfortunately, I did not really leverage the power of my friends and my tribe to help me through. And so I did as I went on through the journey, and I got better at that and even better as I went on as part of my healing journey. But at the time, it was really a lot of writing. Over the course of my caregiver journey, I got better at taking care of myself and meditating and doing things that I need to do. But it was stopping those rumination loops is really difficult, especially if that's kind of the way you're wired.
Nicole, you had mentioned having an engineering background, and maybe this rumination loop could be an unhealthy way to cope with things. But I'm curious to hear, did having this background help you when you were seeking a diagnosis or in caring for Russ?
In my job, I worked on surgical robotics, right? It's one of the most complex systems that you can work on in the medical space. And so I'm used to really complex systems, but the human body is infinitely more complex than the things that we build. But I still just, the whole process that we go through in engineering of, well, if something is not right, there's a root cause and you have to figure out what the root cause is. And the first thing you see, the symptom, you know, so if I'm working on a robot, maybe the arm is shaking, right? You don't stop the shaking by putting a weight on it. You stop the shaking by figuring out why it's shaking. And so when my husband started getting sick, I had to figure out why. What was the root cause? Why was this happening to us? And, you know, I got him tested for early onset genetic markers. He didn't have any. He didn't have any comorbidities. And I couldn't figure out why he, at such a young age, was exhibiting these really dramatic symptoms. And his slide and his decline seemed to be really accelerated as well, based upon everything that I was reading in the dementia literature. So I poured in to everything I could find. And I was trying to get answers. I got him tested for everything that I could think of, infections, you know, I had him tested for tick-borne illnesses. I had him tested for even things like HIV and syphilis, where you're not really sure which answer you're looking for there, where, you know, what's better, your husband has dementia, he has HIV or syphilis. And so it's really, you know, that kind of forced me to figure out what was going on, but I kept coming up negative. I kept going to doctor after doctor and I couldn't figure out what was going on. They just said at the end of the day, his diagnosis was Alzheimer's. And it was, as I said earlier, late stage disease. So they really didn't offer anything for us to do other than to come back in 3 to 4 months and track his decline. And that's what I found to be really infuriating. So I think it helped me in, you know, trying to dig into the root cause, which we eventually found actually through just by circumstance, right? My brother, he had been going through something similar with his wife. His wife had lots of medical issues that I won't go into the details, but she had been struggling with them for years. And so she finally figured out what the root cause of her illness was, and it was tick-borne illness. And so he called me one morning and said that he thought that I should get Russ retested for Lyme disease, which was one of the first things that I had him tested for when I knew that he was sick, because my husband was a hunter. He always did all the landscaping in the yard. He had lived all over the country, including high risk areas for ticks and Lyme disease. And it was one of the first thoughts that I had. And you do some research and you realize that there's neuroborreliosis. Borrelia is the bacteria that causes Lyme disease. And neuroborreliosis can lead to dementia. But I had him tested and he tested negative. But my brother, you know, in talking to me and his research, he's a doctor. And so just like me, he likes to dig in. And he shared how poor the tests were and how they look for antibodies, which is your immune system's response. And sometimes your immune system doesn't respond and you'll test negative, even though you still have the infection. And so he convinced me to get him retested. And I did. And I eventually found out that he did have tick-borne illness. He actually had 3 infections. He had Borrelia, which is the bacteria causing Lyme disease. He also had Bartonella, which is another bacteria that is very difficult to diagnose and also has a huge impact in the brain. And then he also had Babesia. And so these are 3 relatively common tick-borne infections, and Russ had been suffering from them for probably years. And that was what was leading to his cognitive decline. And we just happened to stumble upon it. And so I guess back to your original question about, you know, my engineering mindset, it's searching for that root cause, but sometimes you just need a little bit of luck to get you there at the end of the day.
A little bit of luck. And then just talking to people, your family, your brother, others. And can we just stop right here and say, I just want to say I am in just so much awe of you. And we've never had a medical robotics engineer on our program before on the podcast. And so that in itself is an honor. But to hear you talk about your husband being the smartest man that you have ever known, and that he was feeling shame about this and didn't really want to talk about it, and the fact that you were reaching out and talking about it, and that that led you to the answer you were looking for, is so interesting to me. Can you talk to us a little bit about the importance? You've mentioned it before, but the importance of asking for help.
Yeah, that is probably one of the biggest lessons I've learned on this journey, is that, you know, people want to be there for you, right? I have a fantastic group of friends, and if any one of them called me and said that they needed something, I would be right there and I would do whatever they needed, because I love them and I love to be of service and to help them through whatever they're going through. But when it comes to my issues, I'm like, I got this. I don't need anything, right? And there was the shame of Russ not wanting to share. And so that kind of fostered us not reaching out as much. And as I got deeper and deeper in his dementia, that became harder and harder. And I realized that we needed to get help of people. And it was really selfish not to let people help me, because I wanted to help them. If they had a problem, why shouldn't I let them help me? Right. And part of that journey is really critical. And I had a friend who went through something very similar with his wife with ALS. And, you know, he did the complete opposite, and he reached out for help from the very beginning. And I watched his journey and I was in awe in the beauty of it, because, you know, so many people supported them and loved them. And I unfortunately did it the hard way. And over time, you know, kind of came about to where he ended up, which is, it's much better to seek that community and to get the support that you need, because the alternative is just, it's too much. It's a burdensome and it's a very, very difficult disease. And if you don't establish those communication lines early, then you're doing it at the expense of your own health.
And you mentioned this can be a burdensome journey and the importance of connecting with other people. And part of that burdensome journey comes from the fact that you, as a primary caregiver, are always listening, watching, questioning, and having to advocate for your person. Could you talk to us some more about the importance of advocating, even especially, I think you shared a story about kind of when your husband was first getting diagnosed.
Yeah. So we went to see many neurologists in my search for root cause. And I finally landed in the office of one of the top dementia experts in my area. So I live in the Raleigh-Durham area in North Carolina. And we went to the person that was recommended by all the people that know. And we sat in his office and I thought I was going to finally get my answers. And after he went through all of his scans and all of his medical history, I asked him for the reason. Russ walked out of the room because he was frustrated with all of the cognitive tests. And I stared at the doctor and I said, you know, doctor, please tell me why this is happening. And he looked at me and he said, you know, Mrs. Bell, I know you don't want to hear this, but sometimes shit happens, excuse my language, but that was devastating to me, because again, I'm an engineer. I want root cause, and I'm trying to figure out why this is happening to my husband. And the best that the medical community has to offer is that shit happens. And that's just not okay. It's not okay. And so that was a defining moment for me to realize that the medical system is very broken. And I think that in terms of advocacy in tick-borne illness, it's really important, because a lot of these diseases are misunderstood. A lot of them are not, the treatment protocols are not well established, or if they, especially for people who have advanced disease like Russ. So if you have early stage Lyme disease, you can be on antibiotics for a few weeks and generally do really well. But when you have late stage disease like he did, the treatment protocols are much less clear. And so we went through and we treated, and I did the research and did a lot of the kind of the latest and greatest that we knew based upon the research and based upon, you know, medical experts. And we treated for about 18 months, but unfortunately that journey didn't end well. And his, he ended, as I said earlier, he ended up passing away despite our best efforts because it was a very late stage diagnosis. And so that's the challenge that you have, and going through that journey is really critical. And, you know, and then also making those decisions for him. You know I describe myself as a caregiver, but also as his medical proxy, because as he declined, you're now making life and death decisions for him. And that is a bigger role than just being a caregiver. When you are at, you know, actively deciding the health and the outcome of a person and their life and their comfort, that is a whole nother level of stress and caregiving that I think a lot of people don't realize because they haven't been in it. I hope that most people haven't been in it, but once you're there, it's intense and it can be a really daunting job.
I want to talk about that intense moment that you had and what you went through. And for those of us who work in the healthcare field, I can only imagine that in listening, we're cringing that that happened to you, and that our caregivers are cringing that that happened to you. And I'm so sorry to hear that that happened to you. And maybe we're just so spoiled at the research institutes that we work at that we get to hear back from the community that I was just so taken aback when I went in for my first visit. And the doctor spent so much time with me and was so thorough and was so kind and supportive. So to hear that you went through that, I just want to say, I'm so sorry to hear that. And I'm wondering, as you're looking back, I think it's so important for those of us who do work in the field to know what it's like to be a caregiver. And I'm wondering, is there anything that you would want to share with our healthcare providers, our professional caregivers, that maybe from what you've learned along your journey might help us to provide better care?
I think that there are, you know, sometimes the prevailing theme with Alzheimer's and dementia is that it's inevitable and that there's nothing that you can do. But a lot of the research out there shows that that's just not true, right? There's many infectious causes of cognitive decline. There's also lots of research that shows that diet and exercise and sleep patterns and, you know, lots in supplementation and other things can really, if not reverse, but definitely, you know, slow the decline and give people, you know, a longer quality of life, right? Because if you can make somebody's day a little bit better, then that is really meaningful. And even just finding in my journey with Russ's health, I was able to find some supplements that really stabilized his mood and took him from being extremely irritable and nasty to being calm and very sweet. And that difference to a caregiver is amazing. You know, these, what we used were just some exogenous ketones, you know, that helped feed his brain that was declining. And that made all the difference for me as a caregiver. And so there are things out there and things that people can do that when I experienced, it was really more in the neurological space. It was just, well, like I said, come back in 3 months and we'll let you know where he is. And I think that digging deeper and figuring out how to make the experience as good as it can be is really something that I would want healthcare providers to really try and tackle.
I want to pull us back to that quote that I shared at the beginning of our conversation. You said, sometimes life has a way of pulling what's important into focus, even if it takes mass destruction to clear the path. Oftentimes after a long and difficult journey, we're reflecting on it and we're trying to find the meaning in it. For you, what did this pull into focus?
The thing that it really pulled into focus is what my core values are. So one of the chapters towards the end of the book, and as I was trying to define and decide what is next in this phase of my life. I centered on what are my core values and really am using that to go forward and define the next phase of what I do, because you get caught up in all the things, right? I had the job, I had the kids, I had the house, I had just an infinite list of tasks that I needed to do. And I was missing the big picture. And so those core values, you know, the number one thing for me is health, because I realized that if you're not healthy, then you can't be in service to anyone. You can't do a good job. You can't help others. You can't do the things that you want to do. And so I take that very seriously now. And that doesn't just mean, you know, diet and exercise and the things that you think of. It means really understanding my body, really going to the doctor with that engineering mindset that I talked about and saying, okay, where are my labs and what does that mean? And how can I get things better? And what is the best way to optimize so that I can be the best possible version of myself? And, you know, and then other values such as family and my friends, and really pulling that into focus so that as I decided what was next, I could make sure that I was really being true to that. And then obviously I think the whole experience with tick-borne illness has been eye-opening. And so I've really turned a lot of my career and the things that I've done in medical devices to trying to be an advocate and to trying to change and solve some of the problems that we experienced in getting diagnosed and in getting properly treated.
Nicole, I've really appreciated our conversation today. And before we close, I wonder, could you give us your final thought when it comes to your caregiver journey?
It is by far the hardest thing I've ever done. You know, I've done a lot of great things in my career. I've always done small companies and startups, which is a challenging environment. But being a caregiver and being that medical proxy is by far the hardest thing I've ever done. And as I was trying to do that and work and be a mom and take care of the household and all the things that you need to do just to get by, I kept telling myself that I was failing. You know, I've always done well in school and done well in my career. And, you know, I would always want to achieve as much as I could. But when you're trying to juggle all those things, you tell yourself that you're a failure because you can't achieve and you can't do when you're trying to do all that's on your plate. And so that's the hardest thing. I think the biggest thing I would say to caregivers, and I do say to your caregivers, is to give yourself grace as part of the process. It is a hard job. You need to ask for help. You need to get the support of those around you and ask them to do whatever it is, whatever they're good at. It can be helping with something that's a very small task just to make your day a little bit easier, and to be kind to yourself in the process, because I think all of the things that we say, the negative talk, the stories we tell ourselves, they're not true. I mean, I talk about in the book and I've talked about subsequently, it's like sometimes success is just surviving. And with dementia, that really rings true, because the journey doesn't end well in Alzheimer's disease, and the journey doesn't end well if with advanced stage dementia. And so you really just need to survive and take care of yourself in that process so that you don't become another patient in this whole journey.
Today, our conversation has been with Nicole Bell, author of What Lurks in the Woods. If our listeners are interested in learning more about Nicole or her book, you can visit NicoleDanielleBell.com. Nicole, we so appreciate your time in helping us untangle your caregiver journey.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really been a pleasure.
Yes, thank you so much, Nicole. And thank you, Heather, for a great conversation. And thank you to our listeners for joining us. If you haven't already, please subscribe and share this podcast. I'm looking forward to our next conversation on Dementia Untangled. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Dementia Untangled. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Dementia Untangled is hosted by Heather Mulder and Janice Greeno. produced and edited by Amber Ayers, and is brought to you by Banner Alzheimer's Institute and Banner Sun Health Research Institute. We are supported by generous donations to the Banner Alzheimer's Foundation.
Please visit our website at banneralz.org and follow us on Facebook to learn about upcoming events. If you have questions or comments, please email us at dementiauntangled@bannerhealth.com.